This is a Triple J podcast.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Science with Dr. Carl, where this week we got into nausea. We talked about morning sickness, but we also talked about motion sickness, particularly motion sickness as you get older. We had people texting in who were surfers for years and years, and then only in the last 5 years have they started getting seasick while they've been surfing. We have a guy who's been playing video games his whole life, and only recently with some of the newer games is he starting to feel that motion sickness. I can't even look at texts in the back of a car without feeling nauseous and like I need a lemonade. What's going on? Dr. Carl chats about this and more on this week's episode. Let's get into it. Dr. Carl is across from me wearing a blue shirt with skeletons all over it, Dr. Carl. I love this one.
I'm colour blocking.
Yeah.
So I've got a blue top and blue shoes, blue trousers. It's weird. So you go for a walk in society in Europe and both the men and the women are dressed up when they go out. But in Australia, only the women get dressed up and the men, it's a big night out, the guys are wearing thongs and T-shirts and
You're telling me, Dr. Carl.
Oh, God, I know. But it's just terrible.
You show up every Thursday, every day.
With sartorial elegance.
Yes, dressed to the nines, ready to go.
Colour blocking, mate. And I've just discovered there's this weird thing. We're giving a hint for something in the future. There's a weird thing called the Young Double Slit Experiment, which implies that a particle can be in two places at the same time. And now a follow-up has been done implying that a particle can be in two times. We need a clever person in physics to explain that to us, and that'll happen in a few weeks. But
particle can be in two times
at the same, I don't know, would you say time? We need a clever person to explain is coming, but oh my God, time travel, finally we can say not impossible at this stage, but we don't know.
Yeah, we're going to be getting into the physics world
very soon
on the show, Dr. Carl. Let's get into this week's questions.
Yeah.
We're kicking it off with Zoe on the Sunshine Coast.
Dr. Zoe.
Zoe, babe, what's going on?
Hi, guys. I was just wondering, I'm having terrible morning sickness at the moment and I've struggled with all of the usual tips and tricks. I was just wondering if there's any like scientific ways to help with nausea. I know some people say like phosphoric acid in Coke or something. Is there any other things like that that usually curb nausea?
Okay, so how many weeks down the line are you?
17.
Oh, hang on, is this your first baby?
No, my fourth.
Oh, okay, so you're already feeling the baby kicking.
Not really.
But okay, yeah. Not really. So this is number four, 17. And did you have morning sickness with the previous ones?
Yes, very bad. I haven't discovered anything yet that's helped it.
Okay, this is the land of placebo, right? I'm a big fan of the placebo if it's cheap enough and doesn't have side effects. So I'd basically say try anything, and if it's cheap and you think it works, go for it. Right?
Yeah.
But definitely be careful. So you might, for example, find that drinking lots of a diet cola would relieve it. But the trouble with a diet cola is really acid on your teeth. So what you got to do is go swig, 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 drink, and then wash it off with water as opposed to sip it during the day. So, but in general, I just try some sort of placebo. If there's somebody in obstetrics and gynecology, and midwives know an awful lot, they've been around for thousands of years, but I'm kind of thinking you've probably been down that pathway. But if somebody has, please ring in 0439757555. Oh my God, I got it right. Oh my God, I'm learning.
He's done it.
I was listening to you yesterday morning and you gave the number out. So I thought, is she going to give the right number? You did give the right number.
You committed it to memory, yeah.
Already. So I'm using a precious memory for that. So Zoe, look, I don't know, maybe somebody will ring in, they'll have something.
Is there a particular, you know, anti-nausea remedy that you have, Dr. Carl?
The trouble is, ginger, I'm sure you've tried ginger, haven't you, Zoe?
Yeah, I've been down all the avenues, so I thought I'd try one of the most obscure ones of trying science.
Yeah.
On Danzatron is a prescription drug you get from your medical doctor, and it does work for motion sickness, but I don't know of its interactions with regard to being pregnant. I just don't know. I could find out by looking it up, but check out with your doctor on that. But I'm pretty sure you've gone down that pathway.
Thanks, Zoe.
Yeah, so that's right.
Deepest sympathies,
thank you,
Dr. Zoe.
Thanks, guys. Have
Thank
a good,
you.
Good luck.
And I love babies because they disobey the laws of physics. Because normally, if you win here, you lose there. But babies generate happiness and love out of nothing.
I
mean, they're so cute.
And that's so sweet. So we've got Bailey and Aubrey here. Dr. Bailey. This is something that I'm really bad at. Bailey, what's your question?
Hey, doctors. When you do your washing and you leave it on the lawn, but then it rains the next day, should you wash it again?
Yes and no, depending on where you are. On one occasion, my son, living in China, was walking across Tiananmen Square and he could not see 50 metres because the air pollution was so bad. Okay, under those circumstances, definitely yes. You're lucky to be living in Australia, and if you're not close to industrial pollution, almost certainly you'll be fine with just letting it get a little bit wet and then bring it in, bearing in mind you don't leave it out there for days or weeks at a time and you don't put it away wet and that sort of stuff. If you are worried about it, if you do think there might be some industrial pollution or there's smells in the air or salt. So in the afternoon, in the morning, you tend to get the offshore. So it's the afternoon. If you're near the beach and you've got your clothes on the line and the ocean can get to it, if you're within a kilometre, like the first hill, then you'll be getting some salt. But in general, you're fine in Australia. Are you in a high pollution or low pollution area?
Oh, probably a low pollution in Albury. So
yeah. Oh, you're right. Look, we're very lucky in Australia that we've got clean air because of government regulation. I love clean air. So in general, just let it dry again and you're okay in most cases.
Yeah, sweet.
Sweet.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey.
We've got Violet in Newcastle. Dr. Violet, you are with your fam. What's your question?
Yeah, my question was, do colorblind people dream in color or like black and white?
In general, they dream in a color, but not the full color. So we humans have, on average, 3 color receptors, one for red, one for green, one for blue. There are a small number of people who have got 4, and about 2% of the population, males, have got only 2. They've got sensitive one, and they've got either one that's sensitive to red or to green, but not both, and they can't work as airline pilots. And to take care of them, with regard to traffic lights, we put a little bit of blue into the green. So if you are suffering one of those colour blindnesses, you'll tend to dream in only the colours that you know of because the other ones don't exist. If you've got... And we know for sure that people who have absolutely no colour, no cones at all, and it's very rare and it's associated with being albino and a whole bunch of other things, they literally see only in black and white, one colour and then lack of it, so you call that just black and white, they don't dream in colour. And the other thing is that the colours that you dream in related to what you see, but as you get older, the lens in your eye gradually opacifies and the colours get more muted with time. They begin to get sort of faded. And painters talk about how when in their 50s or 60s or 70s, they get the cataract operation and then suddenly think, there's a whole new palette. I see the world differently. And they paint differently again.
Wow, yeah.
So, but in general, they dream in the colours that they can see.
That's really interesting.
By the way, just to finish off, dogs, they can see blue and they got another receptor that's halfway between green and red, it's sort of yellow, so they don't see a red sunset, but they can see a blue sky.
Aww.
They'll see a sort of a yellowy sunset, and so they're missing the full range of colours that we can see. And the other end, something living, the mantis shrimp, it's got 16 different colour receptors, so it can look at the ocean floor in the Great Barrier Reef somewhere, and it all looks grey, but it sees a whole bunch of colours that we don't see, and the reason for those colours is so it can find food.
That's really cool.
Lucky shrimp. Hey, thanks, Violet.
Thank you, Dr. Violet.
Yeah, thanks.
Nate on the Sunshine Coast. We had a question earlier about someone who is going through morning sickness, the nausea. What is your question?
Hello, doctors. My question is about more like motion sickness rather than morning sickness.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of how does motion sickness work and all of these things and how to prevent it of those measures. I've played a lot of video games in my life. In the last 3 or 4 years, I've developed motion sickness to some of the video games that I play.
Wow.
I was wondering how to stop doing so, but...
Hang on, wait a second. As you said that, I thought, oh my God, I've never heard of that. And then in the background, Lucy's going,
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard of this.
Well, Nate, once I used a VR headset and I'd never used one before and it was just in my bedroom, COVID era, and it was weird. And I felt kind of motion sickness afterwards when I'd kind of had it on for too long.
Yes. So the VR headsets, I can even answer because I do know that the VR headsets trick the brain with the motion of the body and the motion of the eyes. So I do know that from that experience. Mm-hmm. But mine's even just been standard PC and console gaming.
Yeah.
Obviously, game fidelity is better than it's ever been in the world and things like that. But yeah, I had no issue in school playing hours and hours and hours of video games. And then very recently, some of these newer video games are just making me feel, like I said, the nausea and the headaches and that sort of stuff. So preventative measures and get rid of it, please. I want to play video games again.
So let's say, you know, you mentioned the newer video games. If you chucked on a Spyro or a Crash Bandicoot, are you still having that sort of feeling?
No, not at all. That's the thing. So like it is, it's mostly in those ways of your third-person shooters. The new Resident Evil is a fantastic little example of such a great experience so far, but that kind of thing where it's like, rather than playing it, you know, 4 hours at a time, it's kind of more like one or two.
Dr. Carl, any thoughts?
Let's go back
to the beginning. Yeah. So generally, what is motion sickness?
In general, it's a conflict between what your balance centers tell you, and the balance centers are the balance centers in your near your ears, as well as proprioception, knowing where your body parts are. And there's a conflict between those two things and what your eyes see. So you might be riding in a car and trying to look at a book, and the book relative to your body is stationary, but your ears are telling you that you're going left and right around corners and bumping up and down. So that's the basis of motion sickness, and it varies with time. I used to be very motion sickness prone, and then when I started going to Antarctica, I found that I had suddenly become immune, and on a ship with maybe 100 guests, I was one of the 5 people who was totally immune, except on one ship I saw there were a bunch of people, like 20 of them, and I thought, this number is a bit too high. I reckon they're onto the good stuff. They're on the juice. In this case, on Danzatron. And so following the old hippie rule, that the first drug is always free, I'd wait until they were by themselves and I'd come up to them one at a time and say, I noticed the ship's pretty busy, but you're not motion sick. And they said, oh yeah, I'm taking the on Danzatron. And then I'd say, could I have one for my daughter? And I repeated this 19 times, and in that way I was able to get her free of motion sickness. I don't know if on Danzatron, which is a drug you get by prescription, is taking it too far, but that's a possibility. Other than that, ginger.
Does this help, Nate? Someone's saying increase your field of view. 90 plus usually helps.
Oh, my God, I hadn't seen that. Yes.
What does that mean?
So I will say, so the idea of that is that the camera perspective of the video games can change, and some games add those things in. To that person, I do come from a professional gaming background. I do have my FOV at 110 at all times.
FOV, that's fancy talk for field of view.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
your field of view, if you put your thumb in front of you at arm's length, that's what the average person sees. Mm. When you're looking at the world, all you see is something the size of your thumbnail at arm's length, but your eyes always flickering around. So imagine you're drawing an angle of 90 degrees out of your eye. So that's what they mean by the FOV, the field of view. So what do you normally go for?
So video games normally 110, so it's a little bit past what a human eye would see.
Oh, so it's bigger than 90.
Yes. So the idea of such a thing is that it gives you that little bit of that competitive advantage in that situation because you can see just a touch behind you, kind of.
Wow.
Knowing you're in the gaming world, Nate, God, let's have you on them for the whole episode. We have someone who's texted in saying, I know World of Warcraft introduced non-motion sickness mode. They said, I think it's a mix of screen size, FPS, and more realistic graphics. Have you heard of this?
I've heard of all this myself as well. There are a lot of games nowadays where they have the anti-motion sickness, so they add like a reticle so that you can see on the screen at all times, instead of removing that so the screen just looks like a nice picture. They have those motion sickness things, like I said, we're saying motion blur, different things like that that help remove that idea of not seeing what you think you're seeing, so your brain kind of helps in that situation. As I said, or sort of thinking, I've done all of those things for a lot of the games, and it still can trigger it a fair often. So like I said, I just didn't know if it was a, hey, I'm getting old and can't play as many games anymore or something like that, but I was hoping not.
Nate, very interesting. Thank you so much for your question. We've had Kieran texting as well saying, I've surfed since I was 5 years old and I'm now 40, but about 5 years ago I started getting seasick while surfing. I now take Travel Calm before I head out and it seems to work most of the time. Dr. Carl, I was going to say, I can't really even look at my phone in the back seat of a car anymore because if I look down and I'm texting, I feel like I'm going to be car sick. Is it an age thing?
It's not an age. It's the fact that your body is this dynamic maelstrom. So each day you make your own body weight of a chemical called ATP. And on the outside you just got skin, and inside you're manufacturing these huge bags of this chemical. And with regard to the balance centers, in some cases there might be a little tiny stone made of calcium, which if it's round is the same in all directions, but it might change into the shape of a peanut shell.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're sort of talking metaphorical equivalent here. And so when you get up in the morning, you're getting signals from this thing that's not circular saying you're leaning to the right, but you're also leaning to the left. And to bring that back to the human condition, after years of just waking up and getting up, suddenly, and this happens to quite a few people, they get up one morning and they fall over and they're dizzy. And they weren't dizzy yesterday, and they are today. So the thing to realise is that your body is dynamic and always changing. It's not necessarily age. It is just change. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I'm
God
sorry.
Damn.
Bummer.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nate, thanks for your question.
Thank you, Nate.
No, thank you. I appreciate your time. I look forward to listening to it in another hour.
Okay. Another question. Last question, Nate. Online, do people talk about they got so motion sickness while playing a game that they, wait for it, this is a bit gross, vomited? Do people get...
So that I don't have, I don't have that myself personally. Usually it's a matter of my nausea myself is my headaches more than anything else. And then it starts being like a hunger pain. I've never had vomiting myself.
Have you read of anybody vomiting?
I have not heard of anybody. No, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, at least that's good to know.
That's good to know. No one vomiting while they've got a headset on or anything. Hey, let's go to Brizzy with Blake. Blake, what's your question?
Hey, doctors. So I was listening last week and there was a caller asking about sunburn and why the itchiness occurs and all that sort of stuff. And it got me thinking, can eyes get sunburnt? Like your actual like retina and the membrane of your eyes get sunburnt or not?
Not so much the retina, but rather the cornea at the front. So you've got two eyeballs. I forget whether they're 22 or 24 millimetres in diameter, but one of those. And there's a bulgy bit at the front called the cornea, and that's perfectly clear, and it's perfectly and it doesn't have any blood vessels in it, and it bends the light by about 45 diopters. If you do some electric welding, you can get what they call photokeratitis, because the ultraviolet gives
flash.
Welder's flash. Or punctate, the technical term is punctate, meaning little dots, epithelial erosion. And if you look at the person's eyes through a viewing scope and then you put some orange dye, then you'll see these little dots. And the cure is that you just close your eyes and leave it closed for a while and it heals itself. You get it in people who do a lot of skiing without ultraviolet blocking glass. Now, you would think that the sunglass people would have ultraviolet blockers, but it turns out that many things are not regulated now. Like, I really love the fact that I can go out in the morning and breathe air and think I'm breathing clean air because there's government regulations. The government regulations on glasses, et cetera, have fallen over. So firstly, if it's very bright, you can actually get, but this is uncommon, this photokeratitis or this punctate epithelial erosion. The second thing that you can get is the yellow, the white bits at the side of your eye get a yellow coating. It's called pterygia, P-T-E-R-G-I-A, from the Greek for flat. And so if you wear wraparound sunglasses, they block the light coming in from the sun. If you do the ray diagram and you're looking forward and the sun's on your right or your left, the rays of light come in from the side and they get magnified and they start building up these pterygia, these yellow triangular patterns going out of the central clear bit to the sides. And so when I was working for Fred Hollows and designing a machine to build up electrical signals, pick up electrical signals off the human retina, he said, "Hey, Carl, do you wear wraparound sunglasses?" And I said, No, Fran? And he said, well, just bloody wear them or else you'll bloody get this and that and the other. And so I did. And the advantage of wearing them is that for about 5 years, people say, oh, why don't you get some really good glasses? They look so uncool. And then 5 years later, they say, man, they're so cool. And then 5 years later, they go out. I don't care. I just wear them all the time.
You do have a good pair of wraparounds. They're blue.
Wraparound.
I've seen them.
Go wraparound, baby.
Does that help, Blake?
Yeah, it does. Like, yeah, I've got a good pair of, like, UV protective sunglasses and polarized sunglasses and that sort of stuff to protect my eyes normally. But, yeah, it's just curious as to if you can get sunburnt eyes or not.
Yeah, it's part of the problem of living in Australia with the clean air and the low cloud cover. Mm. And so you get a lot of sunlight.
Thanks, Blake. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Blake.
Thank you.
We had a question about motion sickness. 0439757555. Dave from Bella Vista saying, I caught a boat from Perth to Rottnest Island and there was a swell and I started to feel a bit seasick. The crew put Mr. Bean episodes on and then I and everyone else watching were completely fine. A healthy distraction?
Don't know, but mate, if it works and it doesn't have bad side effects, go for it.
And someone else, that happened to me when I was young. I could read books in cars. Now I can't even look at my phone in a car or bus without feeling nauseous.
But one day it might change because you're a dynamic, moving creature.
David in Stanmore, you've got a question about light. What's going on?
Yeah, morning, doctors. How are you?
Good.
My
David,
question
welcome.
Is about light from distant stars in the universe that might take, you know, thousands to millions of light years to travel here. Just wondered, how does that light actually continue to travel for those, you know, thousands to millions of years? Like,
well,
with a torchlight only has a certain distance, but that just seems to, the light to travel forever. Yeah.
So light is a weird thing, and Albert Einstein did lots of his great insights by imagining that he was sitting on a beam of light, that he was a beam of light. So the first thing about light is that it can exist as a wave or a particle, and that secondly, when it starts travelling, it'll only stop if it runs into something. So if you've got a 100% pure vacuum with absolutely nothing in it, the beam of light will self-propagate and not need any extra energy to do it. The energy's been put in at the beginning, and providing it doesn't run into anything, it'll keep on going. So you might send out, say, a million photons, and as it's travelling, say, from here to the moon, there are particles in the way, you know, bits of gas from our atmosphere, small particles from the sun, helium ions, et cetera, et cetera, and it will lose energy. Those photons, when they interact, will vanish. But other than that, it'll just keep on going indefinitely. We don't have a pure vacuum anywhere in the universe. It's just better or worse. And then finally, and this is really weird, this blows me down, when a photon is manufactured in the center of the sun, it takes 100,000 years to get to the surface. And it's only like a million kilometres, but then to travel 140 million kilometres from the surface to us, it takes 8.5 minutes. So when it's manufactured, it's absorbed and then re-emitted, and each time there's a time delay, so it's not the same photon, it's a different photon, but once it's travelling from the moon, from the sun to us, if it doesn't hit anything, as far as it's concerned, no time has passed. I'll just say that again. When a photon is travelling, it doesn't experience time. It's as though it was emitted from a galaxy a million years ago or 50 million years ago, and then suddenly it lands in your eyeball. As far as the photon is concerned, no time has elapsed. Is that kind of helping, David?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It makes sense. Oh, yeah.
We've got to get a physicist sooner or later. Yeah.
Oh, I feel like you've melted my brain. Dan in Maitland, you got a question about your speedometer.
Yes, I do. Morning, doctors. How are we going?
Dan, welcome.
I was wondering what would be more accurate. Is it the speedo on my car or is it the GPS on my nav system?
It's the GPS. Mm-hmm. So what they have specified into the speedos of cars is that they'll either register the true speed, and then you always have what they call 95% confidence limits. So if a physicist says to you, a scientist says, I measured this to be 5, what they mean is I've got a 95% confidence that it's between 4 and 6, but most probably it's 5, but I've got a 95% confidence. And by the way, I would like it that when politicians make an announcement, they say, this project, this big project will cost $1 billion, and I'm 95% confident it'll come in between 5 and 10 billion because I'm lying to you. Getting back to your speedo, it is not set at, say, 60 kilometres an hour plus or minus. It's only plus. To protect you from believing the speedo and driving over the limit. So worldwide, all the speedos are set to either be accurate or a little bit over. So it might say 65, you're only doing 60. But if it says 65, you're not doing like 90, right? So they're always specified. The GPS is dead accurate, providing you are on the flat. If you're going uphill or downhill, then they have to apply a bit of a correction, but maybe they already do. If somebody knows about that stuff, can you please ring in and tell me, when you're going up an even gradient or down, does the GPS system automatically compensate for the gradient to tell you what your true road speed is? I don't know. So does that help, Dr. Dan?
Yes, certainly does. It's when I'm travelling down the freeway, usually I'm sitting on 110 on my speedo, but my GPS says I'm doing around 104, 105.
Oh, okay. So it's got that 6% overread in your case.
Yeah. So then if I match my speed on my GPS, then my speedo will say around 120 to 122.
It's so sad when things lie to you. I mean, it's bad enough with people. What about machines lying to you? But, you know, I've actually met people who believe everything that AI tells them. Surely there can't be anybody who still doesn't know that AI will lie to you just for no good reason. It just lies.
I know, but it's getting so much better, Dr. Carl.
It is getting
better. People aren't literate with it.
And the pictures are very good. The audio is getting better.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
I saw some little chicks the other day, baby chickens, wearing raincoats, apparently AI.
And really?
I was pissed.
But it looked so cute though, didn't it?
But they look so cute.
Yeah, okay, different world.
Hey, Matt in Berrimah.
Dr. Matt,
we've been driving, you're running, you did a big lot of Ks the other day. Tell us about it. What's your question?
Good morning, doctors. The other day, it was a very hot weekend. I did a long run, a 6-hour run through the bush, so we have limited water supply. Apart from what we carry on us.
What?
Before I started the run, I had a coffee. So I probably spent the first hour and a half just weeing. It was clear urine. There wasn't anything in it. What I'm wondering is, have I just got rid of a heap of fluid out of my body that was precious that I needed for dehydration throughout my run?
You're stuck with the fact that your kidneys are going to manufacture roughly 1 mil of urine per kilogram of body weight per hour. So if you hypothetically weigh 60 kilograms, you'll manufacture 60 mils of urine per hour. When you're at rest, comfortable environment, not running, not sweating, not freezing cold. But hang on, did you say that you went for 6 hours and there were no water supplies available?
Apart from what I carry on me, which is I allow for half a litre per hour. So I had 3 litres of water on me.
Wow. And that's enough. Okay, so the water level, you've got to keep on hydrating, but you don't want too much, you don't want too little, and you're doing the right thing by monitoring the colour of the urine. There was a terrible case in the Boston Marathon about a decade ago where a medical doctor, she ran the marathon, drank too much water, it diluted her salt, her brain swelled, and she died. So, and also people do the other extreme of not having enough water, they overheat. So you're saying, what's the best way to prepare yourself on this?
What I'm wondering was, by doing all that weaning first up, which I think was caused by the coffee, did I get rid of precious fluids that I needed? Should I have not had that coffee? And would I have held on to all that wee and used it as dehydration later on in my body?
Coffee is a very weak diuretic, and if you have it often, it really doesn't do that much for you. And people do say that coffee does have side effects, so I'd think the diuretic effect of the coffee would be minor. So it might mean that you'd loaded yourself up before you went for the run.
Which is what I generally do when I know it's going to be a hot run. I try and rehydrate, superhydrate the day before and the morning of beforehand.
That's longer than a marathon. A marathon, how long's a marathon?
42.2.
And you're doing 45?
Yes.
And you're doing it through bushland?
Yes. Yeah. Ultra trail running.
I think you would need to check with the exercise physiologists, and there'd be a bunch of them who would have really good advice about your hydration levels. But the main thing is monitor your urine colour. And if you're not generating urine, that's bad. Anyway, I'm out of my depth on this one.
Hey, Matt, did you Luca run 30 kilometres on the treadmill the other day?
I did. Very impressive.
Yeah. Wow. And then immediately had a chocolate milk afterwards, which he said he did not want.
Oh, really? It didn't suit him?
He was like, absolutely not. Didn't want to. They had a meat pie and a chocolate milk waiting for him, and he said, no.
Wow.
Don't want to do that. Clarissa in Melbourne. Clarissa, you and your friends do a funny thing. What's going on?
Hi, doctors. So I've got a question for Dr. Carl on repeating sounds. So I've noticed, like, myself, my partner, and a lot of my friends do this. So when we hear, like, a loud sound, like a cat meowing or a siren going off, or even, like, our phone buzzing, without even thinking, we, like, automatically repeat the sound. It's like a subconscious thing. But I was wondering, like, why do we do this?
It's more common in some groups than in others. Certainly it's very common in music, or in team sports, or where you need voice to synchronize what you're doing. That's one part of why you do it. The other part is what's called the mirror neurons in your brain. So if you're having a cup of tea with somebody and they lean forward, you lean forward. And so if anybody in the group makes a sound, you'll make the sound. But then there's another equivalent of that in your brain, that we are to some degree, and it varies from person to person, wired up that when we hear a sudden sound, we repeat it. And so it seems like the bunch of you have managed to self-select that you all repeat the sound and enjoy it, and then go down that pathway of having a good time with it.
Okay, so it's the mirror neurons that are responsible.
That's part of it. And also the fact that you're the sort of people who like to be with each other, and then do sort of like a group bonding thing. Like one of you might not have done it, and the other four are going, boing, and you, of course, then go boing, and then suddenly you find you like it because it brings you closer together with the group. Mm-hmm. And what's not to like about having friends?
So I'm making my friends crazier. I love that.
You're locking them in, Clarissa. Thanks for your question. We got Max in Sydney. Max, you're cutting shapes on the dance floor. What's your question?
Hello, doctors. Yes, cutting shapes on the dance floor. Cross-section diagrams hate me for the amount of shapes I'm cutting. But at the end of it, I am very, very sweaty. Sweatier than my friends, who I'd argue would keep up with me just as much. And so I did a little bit of Googling, which we all know is very, rigorous. Yeah. And it said that I am either very fit or very unfit. I know I'm very unfit, but what confused me was that both two things could be true. And how is it that you could be excessively sweaty if you're fit, or excessively sweaty if you are unfit?
If you are unfit, certainly you can do a lot of sweating. But if you are very fit and part of your regime is that you push yourself and you sweat, then that automatically kicks in. On the other hand, I'd like to point out that dancing is a really good way to keep fit. Now, you're trying to do some of those Latin American dances, which are kind of suggestive because they keep you extra fit, and they also, you make it up as you go along. So you don't know what your partner's going to do, and you sort of have to get in the rhythm where the two bodies move together. So you say, in general, that's the only exercise you do? You don't do any other exercise?
Well, I like to think I do a bit more, but I've been slacking recently.
I think it's the fact that you're doing hard work, and the aircon might not be up to getting rid of the heat, and you're generating lots of heat, and you're probably not dressed in sports clothes, but being a stylish fellow, you're wearing really nice clothes that, in fact, inhibit or reduce the amount of water vapour coming off your body, so you do tend to sweat. I'm thinking it's a combination of those things. I love sweating on the dance floor.
Nice.
I was doing it to the Radium Dolls the other night.
Oh, the Radium Dolls, nice.
I love that song about in a country town I can always get a tractor part, but I can't find love.
That's a great line. Hey, Max, thanks for your question.
Thank you, Dr. Max.
Thank you, doctors.
And keep on dancing. And we've got Leanne in Warrenora. Leanne, you got a question about tea and coffee. What's your kind of preferred times for drinking?
Well, I tend to drink it all day, but I also drink it before bed. And the thing is, it doesn't affect how I sleep. I've noticed that, like, if I'm on a road trip, I'll have a coffee and I'll fall asleep in the car. I'll have a cup of tea before bed. I wasn't sure if it was the caffeine wasn't affecting me because I've had so much of it in my lifetime, or if it's like the warm milk that we used to have as kids and it's a habit. I was just wondering if there was a scientific explanation behind it.
There is, and you are in a small subgroup of people for whom that is normal behaviour.
Oh, God.
You are normal. Don't worry about it. We're all normal. Oh. So number one, coffee, caffeine, is not a stimulant. Amphetamines, okay. That's a stimulant. If you're feeling down, it brings you up. If you're feeling up, it'll bring you off your face. So amphetamines are a stimulant. Caffeine is a blocker of a depressant. The depressant goes by the name of adenosine. If you had a good night's sleep, you wake up, you got virtually no adenosine in your bloodstream. It gradually builds up around about two hours. You need a bit of a break because the adenosine is lifted high in your bloodstream. And so you have the caffeine. And what the caffeine does is it lands where the adenosine wants to land. The adenosine wants to land on certain receptors in your brain. And the caffeine sits on those receptors instead. So suddenly you don't feel tired. So in general, caffeine will lift you up if you've got levels of adenosine, but then you're the special person. We all have a sleep center. In your case, the sleep center is sensitive to caffeine. Yeah. So on one hand, you're getting a low-level generalized, I'm awake through the rest of your brain, but your sleep center is going, oh my God, I've been stimulated by the caffeine, I'm going to go to sleep. So you're in that small percentage of people who are perfectly normal and we love you and we respect you and we'll still deal with you on a day-to-day basis, whose activation of the sleep center by caffeine is greater than the generalized background activation through the rest of the brain.
There you go. That's really interesting. Thank you for that.
Yeah, well, so, Leanne, lucky you.
Well, Leanne, you're very interesting too.
I better be studied.
Yeah, exactly. Leanne, well, thank you so much for your question. That wraps this week's episode of Science with Dr. Carl. Carl, we'll do this again next week.
Peachy keen.
I can't wait. And that's it. Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Science with Dr. Carl. I feel like we covered a lot of ground. If there was a particular question that resonated with you or you reckon someone you know might get around it, make sure you send this podcast their way. It was produced by Josh Brennan. I'm Lucy Smith. We'll catch you next week. Bye.
Dave Marchese here from the Triple J Hack team. Hey, if you love Dr. Carl's podcast like I do, you might enjoy the Hack podcast as well. Each day, we bring you the news that matters to you, from the latest science on climate change to what's happening in politics and news around the world. The Hack podcast, it's your daily fix of the news you need to know. Get it wherever you're listening now.